Okay, so we are starting our third sugya of the year. No problem. This is the sugya, as you'll see. The sugya on the daf is the sugya of Yehari Le'avor, which is a huge, huge topic. We actually learned this last year morning, at the end of the summer. So, when I had to decide, which I only want to spend two or three shirim on the topic, because we have a lot of topics we want to get done. So I was wondering, how do you condense a huge topic into two or three shirim? So my pshara was that I was going to only discuss the issues that came up in the Rishonim on the daf. So basically I decided, because really, normally you would say, oh, what are the issues in the Gemara? But the problem is the Gemara quotes the whole sugya. So that wasn't a good way of doing it. So basically I decided on Tosos, and basically limit our discussion to the issues discussed in Tosos. And we'll get to that in a second. Broadly speaking, Tosas brings up two issues in the sugya. One issue is going to be the Ptur of Karka Olam, which is an exception to Ehar Le'avor. That's what we're going to discuss tonight and the first half of next year. And then the second half, Tosas discusses the exception of Bias Akum, that the Ehar Le'avor of Gilarath doesn't apply to Bias Akum. And we'll discuss that the second half of the sugya. That was just the broad, where are we going here? So before we get into Tosos, let's just do a quick read-through of the Gemara itself. So I guess we'll start with the Braisa and the Gemara. Anyone, Shalom, want to go first? Right, this is Gemara on Pei Beis and Aleph, starting with Tanur Rabbanan. In the Gemara, the beginning of the Gemara, after the second issue. Yeah, exactly, Uber Shavricha.
Uber Shavricha, Basar Chazir. First, we like dip a needle into the juice and put it to her mouth. And Misasha Data, if she's satisfied and it's good. If not, then we give her the olive oils. Then we give her the fat and the meat itself.
Exactly. Sorry. All right, so that part was, again, I think referenced a little bit this morning. Mm-hmm. That's, we're going to hold off for now. But the key for our purposes
is that there's nothing that's in the way of Pekach Nefesh, good for me, but it's our regular Rosh Hashanah stuff.
Meaning what?
That aside, except for the regular Rosh Hashanah, but it's our Rosh Hashanah, you always do Pekach Nefesh over not doing
the exactly. So basically, we'll get to different points in the summer. Right, the general rule is that the factor of v'chai behem, right, the drasha of v'chai behem, the loshiyamas behem, is docha every iser in the Torah, with the exception of these big three: todazara, shvichos damim, and giloy arayos. So now the Gemara's going to go through how we know that these big three, as we call them, are the exceptions to the din of v'chai behem. So todazara minalan. Oh, doing a great job.
The Tanya of Yozer Omer, Imam Arachol and Afshecha, Lamanam Arachol and Afshecha. The Pusik says, our soul lies in save with all your resources. Imam Arachol and Afshecha, Lamanam Arachol and Afshecha. Im Yeshecha Adam Shekufa Chavu Alav Mimimono, Chachnam Arachol and Afshecha. If you have someone who values his life more than his money, so then the Pusik says, for Afshecha, to give, that you have to give your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so some guys asked, which is a very good question, the Rishonim deal with, it's like, where is there any reference to Avodah Zarah in this Braisa? Right? It just says you have to give up your life for something. So basically, the short answer, a number of Rishonim give answers to this question, but the short answer is that, right, the context of these psukim is Shema, the context of Avas Hashem. So, right, the way I think the Ran, the Maran Chalav, and Pesachim say it, is that the greatest breach to Avas Hashem is Avodah Zarah, right? The biggest, breach to your loyalty to Kadosh Baruch Hu and your love of Kadosh Baruch Hu is by rejecting God, Kadosh Baruch Hu, for Avodah Zarah. And therefore, that's why if there's one Avera which you would identify as, the subject of these Psukim, it's going to be the Avera of Avodah Zarah. So that's just for that. Fine, moving on.
Gil Rayos, and Shri Chastam Minalan, how do we know that Yavva Yavor for these two? Tanya, Rabbi Omer, Ki Kashir Kim Ish Ara'ir, Ratzfu Nefesh, Kena Zabar Hazeh. It's a pasuk in the Devarim that compares a nar hamarasa.
Nar hamarasa, yeah.
So the girl that gets raped to a case of someone who kills somebody else.
Exactly. The question is, what's the connection between these two different cases?
So what do we learn about from Rotsach to Nar Hamarasa? That they both teach and learn something.
The connection is in both directions.
Mm-hmm. So. Just like with Naharasa, you're allowed to kill the person to save the girl from the rear.
Exactly.
Af Rotsach. So too, by Rotsach, you can kill someone who's about to kill someone else.
Exactly. That's the din of Rodev.
And Ma Rotsach Yagvaya, but just like with Rotsach,
it's important. It's just important. It's Yehare Vaya, which means to be killed, which is important.
Yehare means to kill.
Exactly. So Yehare Vaya, Avnar.
Avnar Avasa Yehare Vaya.
Exactly. So that's Aradin Yehare Vaya. The Gemara is about to. Right, we're learning out similarly from Rotsach, from Ritzicha, from Shuchas Damim. Tsunam Rosa. The Gemara is asking us not this question, but you know, what's the starting point?
It's as far as the Harud Asala Kame. Here, someone came to Rava.
Yeah, what's the following phrase?
And he said to him, Amarli Mari Dori. The governor said to me.
Exactly.
Katia lefalnia, kill Plony. Be low, and if you don't, Katilna lefal, I'll kill you. So you went and asked Rabbi, what should you do? Amar le, niktilcha, lo tiktol. You have to let yourself be killed and don't kill the other guy.
So here's the very important svara.
My fuzzis, the dummy, the dog, stomach, tummy. Who says your blood is redder, that your life is more valuable? Dilma. Dimahu Gabber Samek Tufik. Maybe his blood is redder and his life is more valuable than yours.
Exactly. So again, each of these things are a topic in themselves. So you know what defines value is a big machlokas. We're only gonna touch upon, you know, the issues as far and as much as it, you know, connects to our Tosfos and the issues of Karkola. Okay. So with that being said, so the major issue that the Bali Tosfos bring up here and in Ksubis and in Sanhedrin and in many different places is the question that, right, our Gemara and other Gemaras clearly establish the din of Yehare Bal Yamur in the context of Gila Rayos. But yet, there are two Gemaras which seem to ignore this din of Yehare Bal Yamur by Gila Rayos. So what are they?
By Esther.
What's the quick synopsis of the Gemara?
The Gemara asks Esther for Hasya.
Exactly.
Seems to ignore the fact that, wait a minute, she's Yehare Bal Yamur anyway.
Exactly, right. Assuming, like the day in the Gemara, Megillah, that Esther was married to Mordechai, so why do you have to come on to the factor of Farhesia that was done with the knowledge of 10 Jews, which applies to all mitzvos, all averos? What do you mean? Just come on to the factor of Gila Rayos, which would trigger the Mechai V'Yarag Bayavar, even if it was Bitsina. That's one Gemara. What's the other Gemara?
Getting pushed.
Gemara?
Getting pushed.
No. It comes up a little later.
Yeah, okay.
This is the Gemara.
And so it's not female, they have the. We're going to have deal with each of the Bnos Israel, and the Gemara says, why not be Thorish that they're Mosach husbands?
Exactly. Yeah, the Gemara, like, Lidjish Lehu, the Ones Shari. Mm-hmm. The Gemara that talks about a terrible situation, that the Hegmon, right, the local, you know, officers, officials, whatever, would have Bia with these Arusos, right, these women who were as betrothed, or Urasos. And the Gemara said, and the Gemara talks about, the tsnuos would give up their lives. The Gemara says, why don't we just tell the tsnuos not to give up their lives and tell them that, as long as ba'ones, it's mutter b'dievet to go continue living with your husbands. So the Bali Tosfos ask here in another number of places, what do you mean? B'dievet, that's one thing, but l'chatzchila, yehare vayavar, it's an arusa, gila rayos. So yeah, that's really the question that implicitly asked here, and explicitly asked in both Sanhedrin and Ksubas, is why both the Gemara Ksubas Gimel and Beis and the Gemara Sanhedrin Ayin Dalet and Beis does the Gemara basically ignore the factor Yehare Bal Yamur for Giloy Arus? So that's the question that Tosfos asks, and the first answer mentioned in our Tosfos, which can be the subject of the first half of the sugya, is what? What's the answer? Why does Tosa say that the Gemara in those two places is ignoring the Har Vayavar of Giloy and Raios? Is there a reason?
Can I go along the map?
Exactly. Which means what?
Which effectively means that if the woman is passive, or sorry, it's received by the person is passive, then it's not a question of receive or Giloy and Raios, or they're not over the Har Vayavar because they have to make a decision.
Exactly. Excellent. So let's just read a couple of lines in Tosos inside, because it can be very important in his raya. So you see Tosos, skipping a little bit, we're just going to summarize it outside. See the last word in line is Beteda, probably like 8 or so lines up on Amud Aleph. So you don't mind reading for us? This is where Tosos introduces, basically he's going to justify the lack of Yehar Vayavor when the person is being passive.
Okay. So the Hilo, the law of the Maisa, aim the Harig, the Homer of Tzeachiyah, you know, the fact that Sheikh al Taisa is something which you don't have to be killed for, we learn from Roseach. Roseach was the Harig, Hainu Mishum, the Maichaz is Dami the Aksum of Tzeh. That the reason why by Roseach you should be killed is because it's part of Maichaz.
And then also very important is that, as it was just in our Gemara, the makor for Yehar Vayavar of Giloy Arayos is Rotzeach and the Svar.
So again, needs to be fair.
Exactly. Tosus is assuming, therefore, the Geder, which can be an important issue, which we'll discuss in a moment, Tosus is assuming, therefore, the Geder of Yehar Vayavar should be identical for Giloy Arayos and Rotzeach, because one is the makor for the other.
So the Hanimili, here comes the Avid Meisah. Well, Elo Avid Meisah, Rotem Nipo al Tino, Kedish the Harib. Vimyakva Idaim, Gehu.
What's the case?
So the case is where that if he is being thrown on Tino, and if he resists, then he's going to be killed.
But him going along is passive.
Passive, and therefore he's going to say it's mutter. Yeah, Gavnam, Ainlo Geharig. In that case, he shouldn't have to be killed. The Avra the Rabba name of my cause is Domin. So he says that maybe you could say that the case over there, because they reverse my causes. How do you know that guy's life is more valuable? Who are you to have run out? Whose life is more valuable?
So all simulated that the svara of my causes, as we'll call it, can tell you to do is just be passive and let the chips fall right the way they may. Okay, fine. So that's one raya. So right, one raya that the Yehar Vayavar of Giloy Arayos should not apply in the case of passivity is because look, the makor for Yehar Vayavar of Giloy Arayos is the Yehar Vayavar of the Svara by Rotzeach, and the Svara doesn't apply in the case of being passive. So the second Raya, the Ode.
So then he says, the Ode, the Hitcha,
So the pasuk says, "Kasher yakum ish arei havras kol nefesh." Right. So the bit, yes.
This should be the same sort of concept by
Exactly. But the key is, as you're pointing out, is that the first day is to focus on the svar. Right. The second day on Tosas is just look at the pshat and the pasuk. Right, it's clear that the pasuk which establishes the din of Yehar Vayavar is talking about a case of hariga biyadayim. So therefore, that should be right, therefore the din of Yehar Vayavar should be
so it should be the same by both Gilead.
Exactly.
Question.
Yeah.
This case brings down of Gilon Shirotim Lapilo Al Tinok.
Yeah.
Is that discussed anywhere else? That's the case that he made up.
As far as I know, that's Tosas' case.
So then he's assuming this is the law. There's no source. Maybe who says he's even correct in the assumption?
Yeah. Well, he just proved it. He's saying the Svara dictates that that's true.
Right.
Yeah. He's saying the Svara and the Diuk and the Pasuk. Right. Yeah. It doesn't have a riot to that as much as it's either an outgrowth of the Svara, or an outgrowth from the Diuk and the Pasuk. Yeah. A couple more lines.
Okay, so then he says, the Rava, the Polyukar who disagrees that the Karakolum is the Svara for Pahesio in that case. Which I know is Aswan, Aswan Shiny. The way which I'm going to pitch, what does that mean? How does Aswan Shiny? Shaun sin esa altamavar of the Dabash Yishloha no Asmo, Lake of Kilo Hashem. So that in a case where someone, let's say, suing it like Moe's lawn went that for not a reason of
it's not theological driven, you know,
thread. That he's only arguing that there's no Chol Hashem in the case of Fahesia, where Chol Hashem is the Iker part.
Alright. Just to spell out, remember, Tosis is basically answering an implied kasha. He basically is invoking this patur of Karka Olam. He's basically raising a question on himself, but like, what do you mean? Rava seems to reject that patur. And you can add, generally, we paskin like Rava over Abai, with the exception of Yal Kagam. So the implied kasha of Tosis is that how can I invoke the patur of Karka Olam and assume everybody holds of it if Rava, in that very Gemara, seems to offer an alternative answer, which at first glance seems to imply that he argues with it? That's what he's trying to answer. So his first answer, as you just said, is Lo Palog, no Elalin Farhasya, Glo Mahani Karka Olam. So what's his first answer? He says, really, Rava agrees that Karka Olam would apply in our context of Gila Rayos. He's only arguing on the application of the Patur of Karka Olam in the context there by Farhasya. Right? Abala Inyan, and we'll get to what to explain that for like in just a moment. Abala Inyan, Gili. Gilui Arayos.
That he would say that in the case of Karka Olam, then
Gilui Arayos.
In the case of Gilui Arayos, then Karka Olam is invalid.
Exactly.
It's not valid for class.
Exactly. So even Rava would agree in our case. Okay. Inami.
So Inami, an additional thing, or alternative thing, that he's saying. Another possibility, if you don't want to say that he doesn't buy into it by Farhasya, is you're just saying, in addition to Karka Olam, which is about the true, there's another aspect of it, which is,
Exactly. Oh. So, but there's two ways to explain why Rava, who we seemingly paskin like, would agree to the application of Karka Olam in our context of Gila Rayos, either because Rava only argues in the context of Farhasya, or he never even argues in the context of Farhasya. He's just adding a second reason.
So it says that when someone's being threatened to be shoved on a child, it says that you don't have to be killed for that. So does that mean that the person, so they go up to the guy and they say, either we're going to kill you or we're going to shove you on this baby. So does he say, shove me on the baby, or does he just have to sit there and do nothing?
So can he say something?
Right, can he be like more proactive in the shove al pasa, or is that still part of being active?
I think as long as... It's a good question. I'm not sure if Tosas doesn't discuss it, but I would assume, based on Tosas' analysis, that as long as he stays passive in terms of his actions, and he doesn't take a stance in terms of doing anything, that he's allowed to say, oh, I'm choosing the option.
So speech, not action. If a woman was mifata a man, that would also be okay? In terms of Karka Olam. So if a woman would seduce a man, that would also be okay? Because even though she's Karka Olam?
So we're going to get to that. We're going to get to... This is going to be a big... issue about whether Karka Olam applies to all bios of Nashim, or does it only apply to specific bios of Nashim, and we'll get to that, those type of middle situations.
I thought the case was where you had like a choice. I thought it was where we're going to push you, and you could either resist, and then we're going to kill you, or don't resist.
I think it could be both. But yeah, that could be the tzir, but I think Nisvara, and as long as you're staying passive, and you're not doing anything, I think you're allowed to say, you know, so push me. I would assume you can say that. Okay, so
just... I just have a question about that. But for that choice to be effective, though, the baby has to die.
For what choice? I mean, for your choice to be passive and
to be pushed, yeah.
The key is that you're not taking a stand on it. The point is that you're being passive. You're allowing events to transpire, and you're not taking a role.
Well, can you jump or move?
We're going to discuss this a little bit more moving forward.
I don't think this is an easy question. I'm trying to figure out if he was like tied up, right? Then like certainly. He has the ability to...
He can't resist that.
He can, though. He'll just be killed for it. But that's fine.
It's the same thing. It's not
being tied. No. If he was, like, tied up, it'd be different.
Why?
Because then he physically can't do anything about it.
That's what resisting is, no?
Yeah, but if he was... In other words, say I tied you up. okay?
you want to show us the kind of
thing? Yeah, right. Say I tied you up. And I didn't give it. I can say, yeah, you can resist all you want, but
I'm
you're getting pushed on this baby.
I'm saying,
it meant like a real resistance.
I'm saying you have a gun.
What?
You have a gun.
Yeah, but that doesn't. Yeah, but the whole reason why these are. I mean, of course I have a gun, but the whole reason why these are interesting cases is that you. Is that the Gemara admits of liability for committing actions even under coercion. Certain actions, anyway.
Those are actions. This is not an act. This is an inaction.
But that begs the question. I think against my position. No. It begs the question. Doesn't actually make this a question. If I've tied you up, okay? So two cases. I've tied you up. I'm going to say, I'm going to push you on this child. I would say you're not complicit. But if I give you a choice of whether to be killed or be pushed on the child, I don't know. It seems like be pushed on the child is itself is a kind of complicity in the death of the child.
But the I understand, but I'm saying the point here is action. It's kumba asay or sheva tais.
So that's what doesn't admit of a distinction between the case of him being tied up.
It doesn't seem like it. As long as he's passive and he doesn't take a stand in terms of actions, as long as he's passive and let...
As long as he does nothing.
As long as he does nothing.
Are you allowed to die in that case even?
Even if he knows the inevitable consequences of doing nothing.
Presumably not. What?
Oh, really?
I don't think you're allowed to. I think that would probably be a breach of my chazus.
Taking a stand would even if it's against yourself.
Yeah, there's a separate question. I don't think meaning.
Do we possibly this way?
Which way?
That way. That in the case of a
there's a general question about what is a big machlokas in general, about whether, let's say, meaning by shar mitzvos, right? Generally, we say you're supposed to do the other Shabbos. Someone puts a gun to your head, violate Shabbos, or I'll kill you. So you're supposed to violate Shabbos.
Oh, really? I thought you weren't... on the basis... If it's specifically because it's a commandment to keep Shabbos that you're not supposed to do it. Or is that just getting like the government...
We'll get to that. But in general, by Shar Mitzvos, by any mitzvah, they say, I'll kill you, you're supposed to do it.
Okay.
Is it Machlokas Rishonim in terms of whether, can you be like a drummer? And say, I want to be Machmir, I want to be killed. That's where the Rambam says, as we were discussing yesterday, he says, no, in that context, the Kiddush Hashem is to live. So he doesn't give you an option. Others, like the Ramban, argue. But basically, in a case like, but for my chazas, presumably the idea is you're not allowed to take a stand either way. And you have to be passive. And therefore, you wouldn't even allow to say, in this case, you wouldn't seemingly allow to say, kill me. Or let's say resist. Because then you're basically taking a stand on my chazas and saying, the life of the baby is more.
So that actually, that maps on nicely to the, right, in the case of, in the classic case where somebody puts a gun to your head and tells you to do it, your passivity is, it just happens to be that in both, that your passivity in the two cases leads to opposite outcomes. Isn't that right? Right, your passivity in the case where somebody puts a gun to your head and tells you to shoot leads to you being killed, whereas your passivity in the other case leads to the other person being killed.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. That's interesting. So just you haven't really said anything, I just want to make sure we get...
I haven't said anything?
No, I haven't said anything. No, I would never say that. And it's not true. You have said something. I just, in my notes were up to here. So I just want to make sure we keep on pace here, especially because there are less makaros in the sugya. So I'm just going to go, and I'll take all questions after, so I just want to make sure we get some stuff done. Okay, so basically Tosis just brought up the tour of Karka Olam. Right? So the big issue to discuss in terms of Karka Olam, just in terms of keeping everything organized, in terms of the different contexts where the Ptur Karka Olam comes up, and then to analyze, what are the shittos in each context. As we'll see, we already saw this, the two contexts. One context is the context of Gimla, the Gimla Averos Chamuros. The second context, and that's the context that Tosis discusses, right, when he applies Ptur Karka Olam to Gila Raios. And the other context is the context of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where Rava sorry, where Abaye applies Karka Olam in the context of Farhesya. We'll discuss each one separately. So first, in terms of the context of Tosos, right, the application of Karka Olam to the context of the Gimel Averas Chamuros. So right, the first shita, as we read in Tosos, which holds, right, the two shitas. The first shita holds that the tour of Karka Olam applies to the realm of the Gimel Averas Chamuros. So that's exactly the shita in Tosos, the first day in Tosos here, which other Tosos identify as the shita of the Rivam. Again, the same Rivam which rejects Rabbeinu Tam's answer next is presented in other Tosism as the first day of the Jesuit. So again, it's the Rivam who basically applies the Torah of Karka Olam to the Gimel Averas Chamuros, and we pointed out before his makor for this, his two makoros, but the first makor is the svar, right? The Torah of Karka Olam is about passivity, Shavat Taisa. Right, Tosos Rivam first derives from the Svara of Maichasis, which says Maichasis basically requires you to remain passive. If it says, oh, if that's what you're supposed to do in the realm of Ritzicha, of Shvichas Damim, then that should carry over to Gilui Arayos as well. And that was the first Raya, and the second Makor was just the Diuk and the Psukim, which again implies that the Harav Yavor of Ritzicha and thereby Gilui Arayos is only when you're doing a Maisa Biadai. Fine. And the other thing which is important to note is that when the Rivam is trying to align this with Rava, right, or Rava who seems to reject the application of Karka Olam for Farhasya, right, but and yet we're trying to say that this application of the Gimel Averas Chamuros is Lekuliyama. Right, basically, Tosos ends up saying, and he says this even more clearly in other Tosim, is that it's a bigger, let's say it like this, it's more pashit to apply the Ptur of Karka Olam to the Gimel Averas Chamuros than it is to Farhasya. Meaning, as Tosos is going to say, to apply the Karka Olam to the Gimel Averas Chamuros, that's pashit. Everybody agrees to that. Right? And the background to that seems to be, as I pointed out before, but in general seems to be, that because the Mechayev, seemingly for Tosos, of the Gimel Averas Chamuros, is the Chumras HaIsser, again, the background is like a big, big, big machokis in the broader sugya of Yehar Galayavar, in terms of, let's say, the Gimel Averas Chamuros. What's the Mechayev of Yehar Galayavar for the Gimel Averas Chamuros? Is it the Chumras HaIsser? Is that these three Averas are so Chamur that they are not Nitches, Pifnei, Pikuach Nefesh, and therefore it's the Avera itself, which is Mechayev Yehar Galayavar? Or is the Mechayev Chil Hashem, as the Rambam famously highlights in his presentation. So Tosos seems to be assuming that the Mechayev for the Gimel Averas Chamuros is the Chumras HaIsser, and therefore when you're Karka Olam, when you're completely passive, it seems like that Maisa Avera is not Mesiaches to you, the passive participants. Mm-hmm. Meaning when you're passive, there's a whole big lumpus in terms of, but when you're a passive participant in an action, that action halachically will not accrue to your record because you didn't do it actively. But Tosa says, the bigger chiddush, and this is what the machlokes potentially between Rav and Abaye in the context of Farhesya, is that's all good and well when the mechayev is, let's say, is an avera, where you can say, oh, the avera is not mesiaches to me. And halachically, I'm not defined as having done the avera. But Farhesya, the mechayev is chil Hashem. So there, it doesn't matter whether the avera technically, is misyachis, is halachically defined as you having done that avera, as long as there's a chil Hashem, as long as there's an appearance of an avera being, violated, that should be mechayev. So then the machlokes between Rav and Abaye potentially is whether the Petur Karka Olam is also going to apply the more mechudosh context of Farhesya of chil Hashem. So again, the Rivam, who applies the Petur Karka Olam according to everybody by Gimel Averas Chamuros, thinks it's more pashit to apply Karka Olam by the Averas Chamuros than it is by Chil Hashem. And that's why, let's say, Rava, who will, according to, let's say the first day, the same Rava who denies Karka Olam in the context of Farhesya will still agree that Karka Olam applies to the Gimel Averas Chamuros, implying that it's easier to apply, it's more reasonable to apply the Petur of Karka Olam to the Gimel Averas Chamuros, and we're explaining now, because there, it's about an Maisa Avera, and therefore when you're passive, it could be that the passivity breaks, the connection between you and the Avera. Masha Enki, in the context of Farhesya and Chil Hashem, that fact it doesn't apply, and therefore it's a separate question about whether perhaps when you're passive, maybe there's less of a chal Hashem. That's a separate question.
Even according to Abaye, the Gemara automatically assumed it would apply to Gedaraya if it actually had to come on to.
Exactly. And the way Rebam sets it up is that the Gemara doesn't ask the question, he explains this more clearly. The way the Rebam plays out the Gemara in Sanhedrin, exactly what Yehuda is saying, is that, of course, there's no problem with Gila Rayos by Esther, because, of course, Karka Olam. But yet the Gemara is asking, but what about Farhesya? And Abai is Machandesh? No, even here, the Ptur of Karka Olam applies, right? Implying that the application of the Ptur of Karka Olam to Farhesya is a bigger Chiddush than applying it to Gila Rayos. Because after Gemara knowing that it applies to Gila Rayos, it still doesn't know whether it applies to Farhesya until Abaye comes along as Mechadish, that it does.
What considerations militate in favor of not applying it to Farhesya?
Because one could say that as long as
the Chilul Hashem is happening anyway.
Exactly. I mean, as long as there's a desecration,
right.
Who cares that? I mean, halachic, meaning the assumption of the Chiluk, right, distinguishing, is that passivity is a halachic factor to say that a Maisa, which
right.
If you're passive,
isn't on your record.
Isn't on your record. But that's a halachic question.
Right. But if it's in public.
It's exactly.
Public.
If it's a public issue about public perception, that might not mitigate.
So in other words, this leaves open the question of Esther's innocence, assuming she's married. Right? Because that was before Hesia.
Correct. That's what the Gemara ends up saying, either because of Karka Olam, Chiddush, that, Karka Olam even
does
mitigates against the Chol Hashem, and even lessens, at the end of the day, when the violation is happening passively, there's even a lower level of Chol Hashem attached to that, the Chiddush of Abaye, / the Rava's answer of Hanos Atzmo, which is another factor which we're not going to get into right now. So both of those factors are saying, even from the perspective of Farhesya, you know, Esther
Hanos Atzmo, just quickly, in contradistinction to, like, wanting the woman to violate.
Exactly. It's like, Was it a theologically driven and exactly coming against the religion, or is it just for his own honor?
The fact that it was for Hesia, and people knew what was going on even if they actually weren't there, is that a bias far for Karka Olam being affected for Hesia that you can assume the same thing that Esther would have been Karka Olam? Is that a bias smarta for applying Karka Olam to Farhesya, even though clearly being passive wouldn't necessarily be part of the Kiddush Hashem aspect or Chol Hashem aspect?
One more time? Sorry. You said a lot of important things, I'm just not.
I was wondering if a bias smarta for saying that Karka Olam even applies to Farhesya would be that he would say, just as the fact that it's Farhesya, that Esther is Farhesya in the first place, based off of people's assumptions of what's going on, similarly, Karka Olam could be based off of people's assumptions of what's going on.
But I think we also know that she was not willing. She wasn't an actor.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the ten people who had knowledge of the theory of what was going on, they would have assumed Karka Olam anyway, and that's a bias spark.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Yeah.
Is that what it means?
Yes.
Wait.
We know that she was Karka Olam. But it's also, if you're pointing out that because it's all about Yediyah and not Re'iyah in the first place, because they weren't there, so the same way that the Farhesya issue was based on Yediyah, even though they weren't there to witness it, so too, those same people who knew about the situation would also have to know that that she was playing a passive role in order for Karka Olam.
Unless all women are passive.
What?
Unless all women are automatically passive.
Exactly. Once you say that. I don't want to get... Okay. So noted. Good chavrus. I didn't see who you were looking at. But no, that's definitely not true. But okay. So Ad Kan, right, is...
You're right about that, too.
Ad Kan is, right, the Rebam, who says explicitly that the Ptur of Karka Olam applies to the Gimel of Eros Chamuz. So now, transitioning to the second approach of Mefarshim, who say that the Ptur of Karka Olam does not apply to the Averus Chamurus. So the first one on this list, who hints this by omission, is the...
Beitam?
That's also true. It's the Rambam. That's also true. But the Rambam, right? The Rambam, if you look at Perek Hay and Yisodei HaTorah, right, the Rambam's, which itself is significant, as the not assuming is something yet. Exactly.
Very Aristotelian book. I'll stop.
Okay. That the Rambam, when he's discussing the whole, all the dinim of Yahari Vayabur, right, the applications, the extensions, the exceptions, he never mentions the exception of Karka Ola. So this is noted by Nosa Kalim. And the major question that we're going to have to, and this is where Reb Chaim comes in, the major question is, why? Why does the Rambam not mention the Ptur of Karka Ola? So that alone wouldn't be such a significant question, because you could say, no, Karka Ola is a bai. We're normally passing like Rava. So that question of just why doesn't he pass in it is not the strongest question.
What about for Hesela? Yeah, everyone agrees that by getting
no,
right.
Not so simple. We'll get this later, but you could very well read the Gemara as saying that Rava rejects Karka Olam in all contexts. You could read.
So then what was Hava mean? Why didn't we ask the Gilei Arias then? According to Rava, why didn't we ask just Gilei Arias?
There could be other answers to that question. We'll get to that. That could be Rabbeinu Tam. There are other answers to that. But really, the way Reb Chaim asks the question, which makes it a very strong question, is go back to Tosas' Raya. Tosas seems to have a very strong Raya, and focusing on the first day in Tosas, right? If the Makor of Yahari Vayavur for Gilei Arayos is the Yahari Vayavur of Ritzicha, and the Makor for Yahari Vayavur for Ritzicha is the Svara of Maichasis, and Tosas points out similarly correctly that the Svara of Maichasis only requires a person to be Sheva Taisa. So built into the makor of Yahari Vayavur for both Ritzicha and Gilei Arayos is the exception of Karka Olam, of passivity, of Sheva Taisa. So the question therefore is, how can the Rambam ignore this exception of Karka Olam if that seems to be built into the very makor of Yahari Vayavur of Ritzicha slash Shvichos Damim and Gilei Arayos? So that's the major question that Reb Chaim poses on the Rambam. And again, how, in light of the Svara, which basically seems to dictate the exception of Sheva Taisa, how can the Rambam ignore this exception of Sheva Taisa? That's the question that Reb Chaim asks. I'd like to just discuss for a couple minutes the two answers that Reb Chaim develops. Again, more difficult, and some important yesodos that are definitely worth discussing. But just for the sake of clarity, I'm just going to change the order of the presentation a little bit, hopefully to help clarify things. And if it doesn't clarify, I apologize. Present Reb Chaim as follows. Before we get into the specific answers, so like backwards in a sense, Reb Chaim at the end develops two different approaches to the Svara of my causes. And I think if we go to that first, I think we'll be able to go back to the two answers, and I think it'll be a little more clear. So basically, in terms of the svar of Maichasis, right? Maichasis literally means, right? How do you know that your life is more valuable than the life of your fellow Jew? Right? So therefore, the question is, therefore, you must be killed instead of killing the other person instead. So the question is, what exactly is the mechanism of Maichasis? What exactly does Maichasis establish? So here, Reb Chaim presents two different options, and this can form the basis of the two different, you know, explanations in the Chokas, Rambam, Tosas. So one explanation is that there's a stalemate. There are two lives at stake, either your life or your friend's life. And because of that stalemate, because you can't choose which one is more valuable in the eyes of God, therefore, basically you have to freeze. You're frozen. And to add something which Reb Chaim doesn't say explicitly within this option, but it's clear from the contrast to the second option, is that according to this first approach, we're basically saying the svar of Maichasis basically puts you in a stalemate. It just doesn't allow you to act. It basically freezes you. According to this first option, it seems to come out that really the factor of v'chai b'hem, right, the factor of pikuach nefesh, is doche, the avera of ritzicha. It's just that the factor of Maichasis basically puts you in a stalemate. You just don't know which v'chai b'hem is more valuable. Therefore, you just can't act. And then we'll come back. So again, according to the first explanation, I think with this, things will make a little more sense later. First explanation, what the svara establishes is that it creates a stalemate between the two v'chai b'hems, even though the V'chaim Behem seemingly is Doche, the Avera of Ritzicha. Approach number one. Approach number two is that because of the Svara of my chazas, because of that stalemate, it's not just that you don't know what to do, so therefore you're frozen, but because of that, the Isser of Ritzicha is not Nidche. Basically, in short, the my chazas basically neutralizes completely the factor of V'chai Behem, because V'chai Behem can't apply to tell you to go ahead and save your life, because it could be the other person's life. Exactly. Other series. Basically, in short, according to the second approach, the two V'chai Behems neutralize each other, resulting in the Isser, the Avera of Ritzicha, still being in the book, still standing. So according to the first approach, Tzim V'chai Behem is Doche the Isser Ritzicha. You're just the two V'chai Behems, you know, because you don't know which one to take up, you're frozen, you can't take a stand. According to the second approach, because you don't know which V'chai Behem you're going to take up, that ends up, you know, neutralizing the factor of V'chai Behem, leaving the Isser of Ritzicha still standing. And with that background, now we'll go to the two answers. Do people understand that?
I'm not sure I understand the difference between the stalemate and the neutralization.
The real difference comes in terms of what happened to the Avera of Ritzicha. Do we say that V'chai Behem is Doche, neutralizes the Isser Ritzicha, there's no Ritzicha here? Or no, the first option says, no, V'chai Behem neutralizes the Ritzicha, so Ritzicha is not on the books. There's no Isser of Ritzicha here, there's no Avera.
But
the only question is, you don't know now whose life is more chavit, so you don't know which direction to now go in.
So in other words, the calculation is, one could theoretically make the
Well, that's a general question about the svara of my chassis. That's not related to what we're discussing right now. But assuming now that it doesn't matter what you take, I mean, it doesn't matter. That's a separate issue. Is that objectively, you know, they're really wives are have different, maybe assigned different values. We just can't attach value because we don't know. Or no, really, all lives are equally valuable. That's a separate issue, but not necessarily relevant to our discussion. Our discussion now is really. What is the impact of the Svara on the Avera of Ritzicha? Does the Maichazes basically say, in a Chanami, V'chai Behem is Doche the Isser Ritzicha, but you still don't know, you still can't take an action because taking an action is taking a stand on whose life is more valuable? The second option is that because of that stalemate, that basically completely neutralizes the fact that V'chai Behem, and, you know, it's as if the two V'chai Behems like cancel each other out, and therefore you still have the Avera of Ritzicha, which is still in the books. You'll see the difference that comes up in the two.
Just building on Cole's question is, then if I guess the case when it would be relevant about, you know, being the given people is the case of Masira. Because they're both of the next. So if the Hadim is the Dofa, so then you would say that you should be able to be most. The Hadim doesn't say that. And if you don't hold that there's
two. What's that?
The case of, by the case of Masira, shouldn't that also be...
Like Shadab and Bechri?
Not necessarily Shadab and Bechri, just giving someone over
okay.
When there's two people on both sides, like when the person's going to die either way.
Okay.
So in that case, you might be able to say, well, if Bechai Behem is not Doche, and there's just these two Shabbat Bechai Behems, then maybe it would be able to make a... Shouldn't that necessarily parallel?
I'm going to leave that aside for now, because there are a lot of issues of Rodev, which, you know, confuse that matter. I'm going to leave that... I'm going to leave that matter aside for the moment. Okay. So with that, so now going to the two answers of Reb Chaim with that background. So the first answer of Reb Chaim is basically assuming the first option. That basically, in essence, all the svara of my chazas does is basically freezes you, establishes that you can't do anything because the two lives are equally valuable. So says Reb Chaim, that notion of just being frozen, not being able to take a stand, not being able to, you know, perform a maisa because of the stalemate, that is limited to the context of Ritzicha, where there are two lives which are completely equally valuable. He says, when it comes to the the Avera of Gilui Arayos, there's no such stalemate. Right? The two issues at hand is, you have, on the one hand, you have the Avera of Gilui Arayos. On the other hand, you have the factor of Pikuach Nefesh, of Echai Behem. And he says, you don't, according to Reb Chaim, which is an important point, he says, you can't have such a stalemate. You can only have a stalemate when you have two of the same thing, the same exact value, so either the same Avera, or let's say the same life, or the, you know, life versus life. That could be a complete stalemate, which says, oh, you know, you're frozen. When it comes to two separate values, let's say in the case of Gilui Arayos, between the Avera of Gilui Arayos and the value of Pikuach Nefesh / V'chai Behem, there you can't have such a stalemate. So according to the first answer of Chaim, the whole notion of the Svara, there being a stalemate, that is limited to the context of Yitzicha. That can't carry over to the Avera of, to the Ahar Layavar of Gilui Arayos, because that notion of a stalemate just can't carry over, because there it's a completely different clash between two different values, of Pikuach Nefesh on the one hand, and of the Avera on the other hand. So says Reb Chaim, although when it comes to the Svara, there's an exception of Sheva Taisa, but the carryover from the Svara to Gilui Arayos is basically, it's a completely different carryover. The Drasha, which carries over the din of Yahar Le'avar from the Svara of Ritzicha to Gilui Arayos, is a completely different din. And that's a separate din, which basically establishes that Gilui Arayos trumps the Chai Behem. Meaning that B'makom Gilui Arayos, say even B'makom Pikuach Nefesh, the Avera of Pikuach, the Avera of Gilui Arayos is completely Chai V'Kayim, completely standing. And once the Avera of Gilui Arayos is standing, therefore it's even Aser to do it b'shei b'al taisa, because in the end of the day, you are violating, albeit passively, you are violating the Avera of Gilui Arayos. So in short, a lot of blank chances here, the first approach of Reb Chaim is that the nature of the Svara of stalemate is one which doesn't carry over to Gilui Arayos, and therefore, the exception of b'shei b'al taisa in the context of Ritzicha also doesn't carry over, because the nature of the din Yahari Vayavar is completely different in the two contexts. In the context of Ritzicha, it's based on stalemate, based on the Svara. In the context of Gilui Arayos, it's nothing to do with stalemate, because there's no notion of stalemate there. There it's a separate din that the Avera of Gilui Arayos is not Nitche by the factor of Pikuach Nefesh. And therefore, once the Avera of Gilui Arayos is still standing, therefore it's even usher to violate the Avera of Gilui Arayos b'shei b'al taisa. Any questions?
Yes. Yeah. Repeat that.
Okay. That's a good question.
It's a request.
I said please, so it wasn't like that.
So, okay. In short, the question, let's say like this. Tosos assumes that because the Yahari Vayavur of Ritzicha is the makor for the Yahari Vayavur of Gilui Arayos, so therefore the Gedder should be the same.
Meaning what?
Because we learn out Yahari Vayavur of Gilui Arayos from the Yahari Vayavur of Rotzeach, so therefore the Gedder, the parameters, should be the same for both. And therefore, if the Gilui Arayos of Ritzicha is subject to an exception of Sheva Taisa, Karka Olam, so for sure, or it has to be, that the Yahari Vayavur of Gilui Arayos, which is derived from the Yahari Vayavur of Ritzicha, should also be subject to that exception of Sheva Taisa, because that's the Makor. So says Reb Chaim, to explain the Rambam, who seems to have, you know, a distinction between Ritzicha, which seemingly has that exception of Sheva Taisa, and the Yahari Vayavur of Gilui Arayos, which does not have that exception of Karka Olam of Sheva Taisa, he basically explains that the two Yahari Vayavurs are different. Although one is learned from the other, because the Yahari Vayavur of one, namely of Ritzicha, doesn't carry over to the Yahari Vayavur of Gilui Arayos, so Karkoch, there are different dinim of Yahari Vayavur.
Why is there a Yahari?
So the Yahari Vayavur of Ritzicha is based on a Svara of Maichazos, which is therefore subject to the exception of Sheva Taisa. But when the Hekesh between Ritzicha and Gila Raios carries over the Dini Harag Vayabur, the Chiddush is that we don't just make a carbon copy of the same din.
The Svara won't apply.
The Svara does not apply, because the Svara and this idea of stalemate, of being frozen, doesn't apply in the context of Gila Raios. Because no like, clash between two equal values.
So then how did we even...
So the din of the Chiddush, of the Hekesh, is that we're able to carry over the din of Yehareg Vayavur, even though it's going to be applied differently.
So how it's more powerful than the Korah.
That's the Hekesh.
So like, what was the process we said?
The Hekesh connects...
Just as this has the Arlvi Avar, so too should this, but in a different way?
Yes.
How did we know to do it in a different way?
Well, we're saying because if the Svara cannot be carried over, it must take on a different...
Thank you. You do the other way, too.
Parallel, different Svara. Meaning, since the Svara, since the idea behind the Harvai Avar of Ritzicha, there being a stalemate and being frozen...
Can't apply,
so Akarachach... You're forced to say it's a different type.
Then
of
what thing. Even made us think to make the Hekesh?
Because the Torah.
Okay, fine.
I mean, the fact that the Torah juxtaposes them, that establishes the connection. And this notion of you having a carryover, but it being a different Gedarim, that you have, let's say, in the context, it's called, every year, the phrase, Don Mina V'uki Ba'asra, which is basically in the realm of Gezira Shava, but you have a parallel idea where you're carrying over a halacha from realm A to realm B. So you're don mina, you're learning from A to B, but uki ba'asra, the parameters, the gather of the din, is going to be based on the unique characteristics of the destination of B, not based on A.
Even though ain hekesh l'chesan, isn't the rule ain hekesh l'chesan? You can't, yuchalik?
That's a little different. But in short, so you have a parallel, you have a precedent in the realm of drashos, of this idea of you carrying over a din, but it's, you know, the parameters that's gathered being different. So according to Reb Chaim, in his first explanation, that's the idea. You're carrying over the din of Yehareg Vayavur, but the parameters are going to take on, you know, the characteristics of it, you know, its context of Gila Raios. Fine, is that better?
Yeah.
More understandable? Okay. So that's the first piece. That's the first approach of Reb Chaim. The second approach of Reb Chaim...
Two ways to understand the Svara.
What?
Two ways to understand the Svara.
But again, is that now, when explaining the Rambam, is that the Rambam accepts the second explanation that we had before. I remember the first explanation, which Reb Chaim is assuming his first approach, is that the Vort of the idea of the Svara is a stalemate. You're frozen. You can't move. But that first approach seems to assume, but seems to be that the Isser of Ritzicha itself is Nidcha. The second approach assumes within the Rambam, like the second option we discussed before, is that no. The factor of the Svara of Maichasis basically neutralizes the factor of Achai Behem, and basically says that because you don't know which life is more Chaviv, therefore there's no life that we're going to grant precedence to. So therefore, the factor of Achai Behem is neutralized completely. And therefore, the Isser of Ritzicha is still completely intact and applicable. So according to the second explanation for the Rambam, even within the realm of Ritzicha, there is a problem for taking... The din of Yehareg Vayavur will even apply to Sheval Taisa. Because once the Isser, the Avera of Ritzicha is still in the books, you cannot violate Ritzicha even b'sheva taisa. And then the carryover to the din of Gila Raios is identical, according to this Rambam. Because just like we said that the Isser of Ritzicha was not Nidcha by the factor of Achai Behem B'Koach Nefesh, so too, the same din carries over to Gila Raios, that the Avera of Gila Raios is not going to be Nitche by the factor of Chai Behem. And then, according to the second explanation of the Rambam, the Gedra of Yehareg Vayavur for Ritzicha and Gila Raios is identical. In both cases, the Yehareg Vayavur will apply to the case of Sheva Taisa. Everyone understand that part? Right, so in this second explanation, the for both Ritzicha and Gila Rayos, Yehar Le'Yavar applies even to Sheba Taisa, because the idea of even the Svara by Ritzicha is basically saying that because V'chaim Be'am canceled each other out, therefore the Isser of Ritzicha is not Nidche, and therefore once the Ritzicha is still in the books, you can't even violate the Sheba Taisa.
So just like Ritzicha is still in place, so too Gilei Arayos is still in place.
Exactly. So that carryover is identical. But then Reb Chaim explains that the Rambam could still agree to Tosas's case. So even though the Reb Chaim in the second explanation just said that the Rambam will agree that will apply Yehari Vayavar to Ritzicha B'Sheval Taisa. But, says Reb Chaim, the Rambam can still agree to Tosas' case of allowing yourself to be thrown on a baby, because, says Reb Chaim, that case of being thrown on a baby is not considered violating Ritzicha B'Sheva Taisa. It's rather as if you're a Chafza, as if you're Eitz Ve'Evan.
It's not even Sheva Taisa.
Not even B'Sheva Taisa. So it's not Sheva, you're not violating the Avera passively. You're not violating the Avera at all, you are just a Chetza. We'll explain that in just a moment. And according to that, therefore the Rambam could agree that, oh, this Svara dictates that you should be able to be thrown on a baby. Reb Chaim says, yeah, the Rambam will agree. But yet, the Rambam will argue in Tosas and say, but Tosas, that still is no Raya, that there's a Heter of Karka Olam, that there's an exception to the Dinah Yahari Vayavor of Sheval Taisa. Because that case is not Sheval Taisa. That case is rather merely being a chafza ba'alma. So the major question that this chilek of Reb Chaim raises, which I think a lot of people are asking, is that what is really the difference between violating avera b'sheva taisa and being a chafza? Namely, why does Reb Chaim classify the case of being thrown on a baby as not violating the avera of just being a chafza, while he considers the case of an Isha's role in Bia to be passively violating the Avera? In both cases, you're just passive. So why in one case does he consider that passivity to be a passive participant in the Avera, and the other case says, no, that passivity means you're just a Chetza Baal?
This is the being pushed on the baby case is when you opt to be pushed on the baby by doing nothing.
Correct. Even in that case, you're still a Chetza Baal. So this is what I was discussing with a number of guys in Seder, is like to suggest the following to explain Reb Chaim. And that is that the determining factor about whether a certain passivity will be considered, you know, a participant in the Avera, but passively, versus just being a Chetza Ba'alma, is whether the role you're playing is the role of a Gavra or the role of a Chetza. Meaning, if we were to substitute your role, could we substitute that with a chetza, with an inanimate object? Or no, the role that you're playing is clearly the role of a gavra. Namely, in the context of an isha's role in a maisa bia, right? A maisa bia requires two people. Right? And therefore, although she's being passive, but she's serving the function of a gavra. Because, right? There takes two people to be involved in a Maisa Bia, and she's that second person, therefore she's a Gavra participant. But, in the context of being thrown on a baby, to use Reb Chaim's Lashonos, in an identical situation, you could accomplish, that Goy can accomplish the same goal by using an Eitz or an Evan, by chucking a log or a rock on the baby. Therefore, the role that you're playing is not the role of a Gavra, but rather the role of a chefza. And therefore the passivity specifically in that context is not defined as being a participant, because you're just substituting for a chefza, and a chefza can never be a participant. A chefza is actions are done to a chefza, to an object. An object is never a participant in a maisa.
Why is that relevant?
Because...
why is that distinction relevant? In other words, that seems to have much more to do with the... seems to have to do with the nature of the... that seems to have much more to do with the nature of the offense than the nature of the avera being violated than the person than the person than the first person doing or not doing the violating. In other words, does the client say that, so then that the woman, the coerced woman, should be killed sooner than...
That's just kind of wrong.
Right.
I mean, the nafkamina between these two formulations is tremendous. And Isha's passivity is subject to her layavar because she's a gavra participant, she's considered to be violating the avera of Gilai Raya.
That's
yeah.
So what,
I just don't see why that's right. I just don't see why that's... I don't see why the...
Because the point is, the avera of Gilai Raya is not nitche. So once it's not nitche, it's on the books. As long as you're participating in the avera, that avera will accrue to you, and therefore that avera is mechayev nehar vayavu. In the case where you're being thrown on the baby, according to this, according to Reb Chaim's understanding, because you're not a participant, you're not a gaber participant in the action is being done to you because you're just substituting for chafza, so therefore you're not participating in the avera of kihuza at all. And therefore, since you're not, it's not, you're not a participant in that avera, therefore you never violated, even passively, the avera of Ritzicha.
What was the question we were just trying to answer?
In terms of Reb Chaim draws this subtle distinction between being thrown on a baby being considered Itzva Evan, which is therefore Mutter, and the passivity in the case of an Isha of Karka Olam, which you are still, meaning it seems, you know, arbitrary. Why is one, and it, you can say all passive actions are Chetza, or an, all, you know, so why is certain passivity considered involved in the Avera, and certain passivity is considered you're not involved in the Avera, you're just a chemsa. So I was trying to develop that it depends on you know, what role you're playing. Could your role be substituted by a chemsa, and therefore your role is considered to be just a chemsa? Or is your role uniquely, that's a gavra role, and therefore that's a participant role?
So the only nafkamina I can think of between these two understandings of the Rambam is a theoretical case of Sheva Altas by Ritzicha. Is that correct?
Correct.
So there's no other. So in practicality, there is no nafkamina.
Well, the nafkamina is in terms of, you know, the machlokes Rambam Tosfos.
But in halacha, the Rambam will hold the same thing no matter which way you look at it.
I mean, like the Reb Chaim doesn't. Reb Chaim is lashon and plat. There's no actual case of Ritzicha b'sheva
altas. Right, so the both ways understand the Rambam will have no definiteness.
No, but this is his understanding of, this is the way he understands how the Rambam will learn, how you learn from Ritzicha to Gila Raios,
right,
where there is sheva altas. Because according to the second approach of Chaim,
either way, it's no sheva altas by Gila Raios. Either way of learning.
There is. By Gila Raios.
For the Rambam, there isn't, though.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Isha. Only Ritzicha, there's no sheva altas.
Right, according to the Rambam, it won't turn over to Isha, even other way, because the Sfar won't apply. So,
according to the Rambam, Sheva Taisa by Gila Raios is an Isha.
Yeah,
and that's subject to Yehari by Yavar.
It's not going around.
Yeah,
said.
It is.
He said there's no Karka Olam, he said.
There's no exception of Karka Olam, which means that there's a din of Yehari by Yavar.
All right. That'll be true both ways of learning.
Chazer. According to the second approach of Chaim, the second approach of Chaim assumes that the geder for Yehari Vayavor, the geder of Yehari Vayavor,
never includes the Sheva Taisa.
The geder of Yehari Vayavor for Ritzicha and Gila Raios is the same. So the way he has to say it, in order to learn out from Ritzicha to Gila Raios that the Yehari Vayavor will apply to Sheva Taisa, is to say that the Yehari Vayavor of Ritzicha applies in the theoretical case of Sheva Taisa,
right,
which then carries over to the Sheva Taisa actual case of Gila Raios are actual cases of Nasha.
Right.
So again, in the case of Ritzicha, there's perhaps there's no application of Sheva Taisa, but there, it's important as an afkamina, because when you carry it over to Gila Raios, in the context of Gila Raios, there is...
Even according to the way the first way I understand the Rambam, that there is such a concept of Sheva Taisa by Ritzicha, you say it still won't apply to Gila Raios.
Okay, But within the construct of the second answer and the way he's trying to understand the Svara, he needs to say it like this.
I understand that there's no halacha nachmina.
Between one and what?
Both ways to understand the Rambam. First way.
Oh, you're saying, between the two ways to... did you finish your Chaim? I told you to stop at a certain point. The last paragraph in the Chaim has a nachmina between the two understandings of the Svara. So there is a nachmina.
Oh, if...
someone like throws something at a baby, and you don't stop it, even they won't kill you, whatever.
Say again, if someone,
it's a regular case. Someone
throws you.
No, it's an object.
Okay.
And you don't stop it, right?
Yeah, that's not your
ability.
That's not your only option.
What?
That's a
different. No,
what?
Did you kill someone?
You didn't.
I'm saying
that's a separate question of
like
being matzel. That's a separate question of being matzel someone.
No, but it, when he says that, it's as if he did something else to the baby, right? You're just a chesed.
And that's all about trying to find your involvement.
Right. So I'm saying, what's your involvement when you don't?
Because the whole point is that you are the chafza, and therefore you're not defined as a participant in the Avera. That's the focus.
Okay.
The point is that even though you were in that case necessary for
physically involved,
like physically involved in the process,
halacha, yeah,
you were replaceable with something that was a chafza.
And therefore your role is also defined.
Right. Whereas in the case of the person being thrown, in the case of the baby having a rock thrown at him, your presence.
So wouldn't that make your role the exact same as being on the side as when they're throwing something? No?
Not for the purpose of the Har Vayavor, but for other purposes, perhaps.
And it wouldn't matter anyway, because you would rule the same way, which is that you're not responsible.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's... I really want to finish a little more. Is it possible to go a couple minutes? A little minute? Are we ready to schmooze by Abacon?
Yeah.
Is it possible? To, because a little bit, yeah, just a couple more minutes, because we spent a little more time in the beginning, because these are hard and yonim. Okay, so Adkan, again, we can discuss, it's a very difficult Reb Chaim. It's like the first Reb Chaim in the Chibur, it's one of the more famous ones, so it's, you know, good to get it down, it's always good to get it down. But, yeah, so if you have any questions, we'll discuss it further later, but let's just move on to Rabbeinu Tam. So again, the first Shita and the Rishonim who held that there is no tour of Karka Olam by the Gimel Averos Chamuros was the Rambam by omission. So the other Shita in the Rishonim who seems to reject the tour of Karka Olam is Rabbeinu Tam. All right, this is, again, it is also by omission, but Rabbeinu Tam is the second answer in Tosfos. Right, he's going to answer, this we'll get to, the latter half of the sugya. Rabbeinu Tam answers the original question of why those Gemaras reject the factor of Yehar Glayav or Gila Rayos, not by saying Karka Olam, but coming on to a completely different answer of what?
There's a guy.
Exactly, of a guy. So we'll get to the details of that, you know, next time. But now, just try to understand the implications of Rabbeinu Tam not offering the answer of Karka Olam, right? And it would seem, by not citing the factor of Karka Olam, which again is in the Gemara in a certain context, it seems to be, right, it seems that Rabbeinu Tam is rejecting the application of Karka Olam to our case. That's why the Rabbeinu Tam has to come to an outside factor of Bias Nachri. So just two ways to explain what's the basis of Rabbeinu Tam's rejection of Karka Olam. So the simple way to explain Rabbeinu Tam is that he simply passes like Rava, right? And assuming that Rava, by offering the answer of Hanas Atzma in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Dalai Lama Beis, so Rabbeinu Tam could simply hold that Rava and Abaye are mutually exclusive, and Rava, who offers the answer of Hanas Atzma, rejects the answer of Karka Olam in all contexts. So that would be the simple way. And Rabbeinu Tam is simply, we always passing like Rava over Abaye. So Rabbeinu Tam is simply passing like Rava, who he thinks rejects the answer, the heter of Karka Olam. That'd be the simple way.
Why can't he see as a Rambam? Why is he different than the Rambam?
What?
Why can't he always reject the thing as a Rambam?
He could. Yeah, he could. Yeah, I mean, for the Rambam, we were just trying to explain how the Rambam will specifically get out of Tosfos' Raya, and then the same would have to apply for Rabbeinu Tam. So I'm just trying to figure out, just in terms of, you know, Rabbeinu Tam's relationship to Machlokas Rav and Abaye.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but yeah, your point well taken. And the second, I'm not sure anybody saw the Pnei Yeshua, the second explanation for why Rabbeinu Tam could reject the Ptur of Karka Olam is to say that not like the first explanation, that Rabbeinu Tam simply paskins like Rava, who completely rejects Karka Olam, said no, Rabbeinu Tam could agree even with Abaye, as we pointed out before. Abaye could be limited to the context of
Farhasiel,
which is the Gemara. Says the Pnei Yoshua in Ksuba's Gimel and Beis, Zirumas Uma, this is what I had you guys see, that it could be that Rabbeinu Tam thinks that even Abaye will limit the Ptur of Karka Olam to the context of Farhasiel, and will think that it will not apply to the context of Gila Raios. Why? Says Pnei Yoshua, it could be a Gzeiros HaKasev, that the Gzeiros HaKasev of basically of Yaharim Vayavor for Gila Raios might establish that this might overturn the exception of Karka Olam to be Mechayev even the Isha in the din of Yaharim Vayavor. So according to the Pnei Yoshua, even Abaye would agree that Ptur Karka Olam is limited to the context of Farhetzia. When it comes to Gila Raios, Gufa, the Gzeres Akasiv of Yaharim Vayavor of Gila Raios, establishes that even the Isha is subject to the Chiyuv of Yaharim Vayavor, in essence, undermining the Ptur of Karka Olam.
How did the Gzeres Akasiv show that?
Okay, so we'll get that in just a moment. So the two assumptions of Rabbeinu Tam, this will highlight the Gzeres Akasiv. Number one is that Rabbeinu Tam, according to this explanation of Pnei Yeshua, number one assumption is that the Gzeiros HaKasav of Yehar Vayavar for Nara Marasa is going on the Isha. And this is a big issue in terms of the Girsa. Is the Girsa Yehar Vayavar or Teharing Val Tavor? So this Pnei Yeshua is assuming that the Drasha itself is focused on the Isha, that the Girsa should therefore be Teharing Val Tavor. And once the drasha is on the Isha, he's going to get to assumption number two, he's assuming that the...
All women are Karka Olam.
That all...
Women are Karka Olam.
Exactly. The second assumption, that not only is the drasha on the Isha, but that all Nashim, all situation of Bias Nashim, are Karka Olam. We'll get to that a little later, but basically the natural role of an Isha in Bia is passive, and therefore, Isha is always defined as Karka Olam. Why does this pshat have to assume that? Because if there was a case, if there are certain bios of Nashim which were Karka Olam, and other ones which were Kumba Aseh, so then you can say that the drasha is simply going on the case of Kumba Aseh, and the case where she is taking an active role. So the fact that this Pnei Yoshua assumes that Rabbeinu Tam thinks that the Gzeiros HaKasav of the Yahar Vayavor is going on the Isha and overturns, you know, the exception of Karka Olam, there are two assumptions. Number one, that the drasha is going on the Isha, namely Teharig Val Tavor. Number two, all Nashim are always defined as Karka Olam, because that's the only way you can assume that the drasha necessarily undermines the Heter of Karka Olam. Right? Because if there were certain cases of Karka Olam, certain cases which are not a Karka Olam, then you could say the drasha is only being Mechayev and Isha of Teharig Val Tavor in the case where she's not being Karka Olam. The fact that the Pnei Yeshua, B'tasar, B'netam, assumes, right, that the drasha undermines the Ptur of Karka Olam, that's basically saying that an Isha is always a Karka Olam, and therefore, if we're ever going to be Mechayev an Isha in Tehar Bat Tavor, in essence, we're obviously be Mechayev even the case of Karka Olam.
So, before the Pnei Yeshua, B'netam would say the same thing as the Ramban by Hanas Asma. The same thing is true.
One more time?
Like, that, according to the Yeshua, we're going to have to say the same thing as the Ramban by Hanas Asma. That wouldn't apply to Bimal Kamurot because of the same idea of the gospel.
No, because Karka Olam, that's like the second assumption. Second assumption is that Karka Olam is always present. Hanas Asma is not always present. Because you can just say that the case at hand is one which is not a nonsense.
I think there's a cause that's only going.
Exactly.
So he doesn't necessarily have to hold
it. Exactly. Because the only time, you know, that's where you're pointing out, the second assumption of you can only assume that, you know, that the Gzeiros HaKasav undermines certain exception if that exception is built into the case. Because then you're saying, oh, for Mechayev you, and this exception is built into the case, I'll karcha for undermining the exception. So if every bia of an Isha is Karka Olam, so then you can say, yeah, if you're going to be Mechayev an Isha in Tehar Yvah Tabor, Al Karachach, the term Karka Olam doesn't apply because Karka Olam is always in place. Yeah.
So this would be the third way to get around the question, right?
You're saying by just saying it's xeris kasa?
Yeah. Very, very simply, around all the problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the last thing I'd like to just discuss. So far, ad kana, we basically discussed the application of karka olam in the context of the gimel averos chamuros. Right, that was based on that's raised in Tosos. Just quickly, a lot of this will be chazara. Just to quickly discuss the application of karka olam in the context of farhesia, and this is the Gemara's context. So again, the first shita is that the patur of karka olam applies. That was clearly suggested by who in the Gemara?
Abaye.
Abaye. All right, so Abaye is the one who applies karka olam to farhesia, and that's clear. But then we're trying to see if any Amora disagrees with karka olam by farhesia. That's going to get into our previous discussion of Rava. So again, just to chaz over, so Rava himself offers an alternative answer, right? After Abaye offers the answer of karka olam, Rava comes along and answers and offers the answer of hanas asna, which is a separate p'tur, that if, you know, the anas, the perpetrator, is not theologically driven, then this whole din doesn't apply. So the big question that we were discussing before, I'll just summarize right now, is whether Rava's alternative answer implies that he rejects the exception of karka olam. So the first approach is to say that no, they're not mutually exclusive, right? That Rava also agrees to the heter of karka olam. So this is, as we said before, this is the first day in Tosfos, this is a Rivam. Right? The same Rivam who applies karka olam to the Gimel Averos Chamuros, right, clearly, even though we pass him like Rava, clearly assumes that Rava similarly paskins karka olam. Again, as I said before, given the fact that Rava agrees to karka olam, the question then is, so then what is Rava doing when he offers an alternative answer? So there we have two deas in Tosas over here. Either, like I think the second dea says, that Rava is just offering a second answer, he's giving an additional answer, so he completely agrees with karka olam in all contexts, like Abaye, you're just offering an additional answer of Hanas Atzmo. Or you say, all right, that was the second day, or you say the first day, which says that, Rava is just arguing in the application of Karka Olam in the context of Farhesia. But he agrees to the application of Karka Olam in the context of Gimel Averos Chamuros, like the Riva. So that's just the two, and that's the first day in Tosos. Again, the two ways for how the Rivam will explain, and how the Rivam does explain, why, I mean, how he can assume that Rava will apply karka olam to gimel averos chamuros when Rava himself offers the answer of anas asna. So again, either he's offering an additional answer, or he's just arguing on the application of karka olam to the realm of farhesia, but agrees to the application in the case of averos chamuros. And the last thing is to say that no, that Rava really argues with karka olam completely. So according to this, this is Rava is the shita who rejects the tur of karka olam completely. And that's Pepashas, the way the Rambam learns, right? The Rambam, who completely omits the heter of karka olam in all contexts, bein b'farhesia, bein gimel averos chamuros, the Rambam seems to pass him like Rava, and assume that Rava simply rejects the heter of karka olam in all contexts. So that was just the... how karka olam plays out in the realm of farhesia. So I'll take any questions on our way tomorrow. I'm sorry, I went a little longer.